This is a CBC podcast.
Support for delivery of this podcast comes from Chevrolet. At Chevrolet, we bring people together with the things that matter to them most. Visit Chevrolet.gm.ca.
Hi, I'm Fiona Downey, sitting in for Bernard Saint-Laurent. You're listening to a podcast of C'est la vie, a program about life in French-speaking Canada. If you follow current events in Quebec, you can't be blamed for thinking the province has a hard time adapting to immigration. A debate is raging here over how to accommodate the needs of different religious and ethnic groups. The Bouchard-Taylor Commission was set up to address the issue, and as a result of the Commission's public hearings, the topic is in the news every day. Yet, beyond the headlines, the daily reality is that many newcomers fit successfully into Quebec society, and Quebecers welcome what they bring. This month on C'est la vie, we're profiling French-speaking Quebecers of diverse origins. Today, we meet internationally acclaimed contemporary dancer and choreographer José Navas. We asked José to take us to a place in Montreal that reminds him of his country of origin, Venezuela. Here is José Navas at the Andes Supermarket on the Main.
So here we are in Montreal, on Rue Saint-Laurent, and right in front of a place called Andes. And Andes is a store, a beautiful store, very small, very humble. And it's a Latin American store, sort of like a grocery store and a restaurant at the same time. And here you find Latin American music, Latin American food. You also have newspapers in Spanish and so on. And this is a place where I come when I feel a little bit homesick and I need a little bit of warmth in my heart. I just come here and have some dish that maybe resembles something that we have in Venezuela. So here we are, and actually you can already feel the music. We have these three beautiful ladies. They've been here forever, and I believe they're sisters. And it's sort of like coming to the canteen of your school, because they know the name of people.
Señora, ¿cómo está?
Bien, bien. Y yo quería saber si tienen algo que se parezca a la yaca.
Tienen pasas, ¿verdad? Uva seca.
¿Y eso lo podemos comer ahora? ¿Es posible comer una? I just asked for a dish that we had in Venezuela that is called ayacas. It's sort of like a polenta with stuff inside. It has eggs, chicken, olives, and it's all wrapped in plantain leaves. And it's supposed to cook in for hours and hours and hours. So the flavor of the plantain leaf gets into the tamal. And it's quite delicate. It's sort of the meeting of Spain and you know, the First Nations. The ayacas in Venezuela is a dish that we make in Christmas. And because it's very elaborate to make it, it takes at least five or more people to do it. The way it works in every family is that every member has one task. And what is interesting is that when you're given a task, that task stays with you for the rest of your life. In my case, I was the person who had to put the raisins in it. So the way it works is that in a big table, everyone sits around, and there is whiskey or rum or wine and music, obviously. And then from one person to the next, it works like a train, if you will. They pass the dish. So my sister would put the meat in it. I would put the raisins. Maybe my brother would put the olives, etc., etc. And my dad was always the one finishing up, which is with the cord. You have to sort of wrap the whole thing in the plantain leaves. You start around 6 p.m., and then you may finish around 2 a.m., because you make around 100, you make 200. With neighbors and families, what you do is you interchange ayacas. And I used to be so proud when people would say it has the right amount of raisins, because that was my job. And it's very sweet. I think it teaches also the sense of community. That is something that when I come here and I have this in Montreal, now 42 years old and, you know, living in a different culture, it brings back that sense of belonging to something. If tonight is the premiere, I'll be here maybe around 1 p.m. or so, and I will have a little bit of something, be it the juice of guanabana or being the tamal. And just a little moment, the 20 minutes that it takes me just to eat that within the Spanish music and the smells of this place, it brings down everything to normal. I sort of understand, well, it's been a long journey, so there's no reason to be stressed out. I should celebrate. Look at me. I'm here. I made it to be an artist and to live with what I do and to love what I do and to be in this wonderful, wonderful city. So then when I leave the place, I just feel warm inside. It just makes any pressure a gift. And you go like, I'm happy. These are my issues. I have a premiere. Well, that's great.
José Navas, before we go any further, I want to check on the state of your nerves. You have a show starting up this week, so do you still get a little of that anxiety, even if it's positive anxiety?
Oh my God, absolutely. I still feel as nervous as the first time I put a show together. I'm still dreaming about having the show and forgetting the costumes.
A million details.
Oh my God! Yes.
Now I want to get a sense of your dance style for people who are listening. Can you describe it a little for us?
Well, the dance I'm doing right now is what I call a celebration of movement, and I'm very interested in going back to the essence of dance, motion, and the pleasure of seeing good dancers dancing well. And well-written choreography.
When did you first discover dance?
I was 17 and a half around, and I was studying theater. And I was going to university to become a writer. I was studying Spanish and literature. And I went by accident to a building where I was supposed to go to a voice workshop. But I just went to the wrong building and the wrong studio. So I sat down and I was waiting for my theater class to arrive. And there was a dance class happening. And I just watched and I stayed watching. And I just stayed until the end. And it was almost a physical reaction. I knew I was in the presence of the future of my life. And I got really scared because I thought it was the most beautiful and amazing thing I ever had seen. I didn't know anything about dance. And I went home, and without knowing, I remember crying in my bedroom because I knew this is what I have to do.
Why do you say it scared you?
Well, in South America, dance was very obscure back then. There were very little information about it. Just two dance schools, one contemporary dance company, but we were not exposed to it. And I'm coming from a working class that also, I guess, expected us to become something else, doctors, architects, engineers, and so on and so. And I knew I had a bright future in whatever I wanted to do. And deciding suddenly to dedicate my life to something like dance, which I didn't even know either if there was a future there, but I knew that's what I had to do. It was confusing, and I did it for my first 2 years in dance school. I did it hidden everything. No one in the family knew, and friends knew. And it was in my third year in school when the director of the school told me that I had enough talent to actually go to New York, and I should try it in New York. That's when I sort of came out of the closet with my family and my friends about being a dancer. And
what was the response then?
Well, the response of my dad was, you know, there is one Baryshnikov in history and he's already born. So if you want to go to New York, I help you, but you're on your own. Mm. My mom was extremely confused because I was sort of the bright kid in my family, and you know, I was always reading and so on. And she was extremely confused because I never showed to be physical before. And so my dad, to teach me a lesson, he bought me a ticket that same day, an airplane ticket to go to New York. And he said, voila, here you have the ticket. He had to find money from friends, and I sold everything I had and put together $200 and flew to New York. And my dad, his idea was to show me, to teach me a lesson and for me to see how hard it was and then to come back to Venezuela and get it right, go back to university.
Okay.
So.
Yeah.
And as soon as I arrived there, I knew, okay, this is the place where I need to be. And a month later, I was dancing in a professional company.
Wow.
I went to an audition just to see what an audition was like. And it was Lucinda Childs, back then the pioneer of minimalism and so on and so. And it was 500 people in the room. And I just arrived and I was happy just to see an audition in New York. I didn't speak English at all. I had a number. And after 5 hours, at least, the audition last, at the end, we were two. And I got the job. And then I was immediately learning repertoire, and a month later, I was already touring in Europe, in Milan, in France, and so, with a professional company, and I learned English in rehearsals, and so that was in 87, and 2007, I'm still here, so my dad's still waiting to prove his point.
You're going back to Venezuela. What brought you to Montreal after all that, then?
In 1991... I came to Montreal for the first time. My life partner was William Douglas. He was a Canadian choreographer who was living in New York. So we were living and working together in New York. And William started to develop AIDS. He was HIV positive. And our decision was made around his health to be HIV positive or to have AIDS in the 80s in the States. It was a nightmare because there was not much to offer. And for him, it was a better situation to come to Canada and to be close to his family. He was from Nova Scotia. So we came here. William was teaching at UQAM, and I was as well teaching at UQAM some courses. And so
you visited Quebec and Montreal. Yeah,
yeah, so, you know, I suddenly made a community here. Bill died in 96. And
you had good reasons to want to come here, obviously, but what were your impressions once you got here?
Well, you know, it was amazing because in a way, my main goal was to move to Europe after New York. But when I arrived here in Montreal, I was very surprised of how diverse the dance community was, how active it was, and how professional, in a way, the whole thing was. Dancers were organized, unions existed, and the companies had this wonderful and distinctive work. Marie Chouinard, Edouard Locke, Ginette Laurent. And those were the companies also traveling in Europe the most. So being in Montreal, suddenly I realized, my God, we're in the center of it. And are those moments in life that you feel like very subtle changes sort of guide you in where you need to be? And this is in 91, I started to choreograph and I put my first solo show together. And it was thanks to being here in Montreal that I actually had the opportunity to be on stage for the first time with my work, and European producers saw me here. And then I was invited to a few festivals in Europe, and that was the beginning then of a different chapter, and it's been a big, interesting, intense chapter so far.
And what kept you here then? It was precisely that you could do the work that you wanted to do and see the world as you want.
You know, a thing about being an artist, and especially a dance artist, I think you have to place yourself where you can work. And I think in Montreal, there are so many things about Canada that were a challenge for me in the beginning. I had to learn another language.
You arrived in New York not speaking English, you arrived here.
Finally, I was mastering English, and then I arrived here. And I feel, okay, now I have to learn another one. And that was one challenge, and the other one is the winter and the weather here. But the privilege that we have to actually live out of what we do, to actually have a dynamic community, to have an audience. Here, people in Montreal consume a lot of dance, and to be exposed also to amazing artists. That for me is enough. If I have the instruments to make my work possible, the rest is secondary. So I learned French quickly. Winter, I learned how to embrace the cold.
You're a man who believes in challenges, clearly.
and the reason why I stay here then is even larger than that. I like Canada as a country. I like Canada as a project. I like to be part of this. I always was very impressed with Canadians and the way of living of Canada. And arriving here, and for me, it became very clear every year that I wanted to be part of this. So a few years ago, I became a Canadian. And it's interesting, when I'm interviewing in Europe, they always introduce me as a Canadian choreographer. And I always think of myself as a Canadian artist born in Venezuela. I do feel I belong to this country and this community. I love the opportunities I have had here. And I have a wonderful, wonderful family, actually, in Canada. So, I honestly have to be very grateful, because it's been a blessed.
What is the quality that you found in people here that you say you really appreciated?
Well, there's a warmth in people that I appreciate very much. And there is the Quebecois. The Quebecois resembles so much the accent we have in South America in Spanish. In South America, our Spanish is rounder. You know, the liaisons between words and words are made so swiftly that sort of they become one word. Mm. And there's something about Quebecois that has that. When I go to Europe, the French in Europe is completely different, right?
Yeah.
But there's something about the Quebecois that is very chaleureux, is very warm. And it reminds me very much our Spanish or the Portuguese spoken in Brazil.
So it's even like a familiar music for you around.
Yeah. And there is also this you know, the Quebecois loves their food. They love their food. They love their wine. They love their festival de jazz. They enjoy having fun in a way. And at the same time, they are extremely disciplined. Working here, I appreciate so much the dancers, organizations, dance schools. There is a sense of work ethic that I enjoy very much. And when I go to Scandinavia, I find that in Scandinavia. And something about Scandinavian countries that made me think very much of Canada, but especially Quebec. And all those elements make Montreal quite unique. Even the architecture. When I arrive here and see all the stairs outside, and you may have the feeling it's a small town, and then you realize Montreal is so complex and is so cosmopolitan, and is so much happening here culture-wise I felt lucky when I moved here in the beginning, and I still feel lucky after being on tour for a long time, I feel lucky to come back home and to see, wow, I live in this great city. And yeah, it's so far, so good.
There is, of course, a whole lot of debate right now about defining Quebecois identity once again, and the place of immigrants in that identity at this point. If you were to address the Bouchard-Taylor Commission, for example, on questions of reasonable accommodation, what would you want to say?
Well, my point of view, there's a lot of fear of change. And I think we have to be a little bit more open about changing what we have today. And I think Montreal, but also is a reflection of Canada, is developing and is growing and is mutating thanks to the immigrants, thanks to all the information coming into this city and coming into this province. At times, I have issues with what is being discussed about. When we discuss about a veil on a girl going to school, I think they're larger, more in-depth issues that we have to talk about immigrants here, and not to focus so much in the fear that by allowing girls to wear a veil in the school, we may imagine that Quebec is going to become Afghanistan in 20, 30 years. I think it has to do with education of all of us, education of immigrants, but also educations of whoever already had alive here for many generations, and the understanding that there is no such a thing as a Quebecois pure land. That makes me uncomfortable when we talk about the Quebecois pure land and the immigrants, because the Quebecois pure land, which is the white francophone, is not originally from here. They are also immigrants. They are also the result of immigrants. And in any case, it'll be the First Nations, right, that we should address and ask them, are you worried about losing your culture? But we actually refer to the white francophone. And that makes me uncomfortable, because the white francophone is the result of immigrants. And I think we have to accept that Quebec in the future will be the result of this group of people that are coming to contribute to this society. And we will be a mix of many things, of Arabs, of Africans, of Latinos, of whites, Anglos and Francos. But we have to then to be open to mutation, to change.
I'm wondering, in your daily life, this sort of talk that comes up at the commission creates a picture of, you know, boundaries between people. Do you encounter that, though, in at street level? Or is that...
Well,
you've spoken of the openness of Quebecers that struck you.
Yeah, well, the thing is that I function in a sub-world that is very different, the real world. The art world is extremely open-minded, if you will, and very mixed. But I'm brown skin and light brown skin, but I'm still Latin American, and I do encounter this sort of animosity. And recently, a few months ago, there was a man just walking by and said something about immigrants destroying Montreal, and this is why we are where we are. Mm. And he was just talking out loud. He was by himself and talking out loud beside me, obviously, to me. And my choice was to say nothing, just to walk, which is always the best choice. Just peacefully continue your life. But I realized that being an immigrant, you get used to it and you forget when it happens around. And it had happened also that sometimes people, a taxi driver at some point, I was living on tour with my technical director, and because my technical director is white, he assumed that the boss was the white person. And when he said, no, actually, my boss is him, the guy just make a noise like, poof. Mm. How can you call this person your boss?
Oh.
You know? And we just laugh. My technical director was traumatized by it. And I just told him, look, this is... I guess it's part of life, but there are some people, I guess, that have many fears. But I do not encounter these situations often, but they do happen. But you learn; it makes you stronger. And the beautiful thing is when you are able to actually peacefully continue your day, and then you just don't even remember what happened, because it's, in fact, it's not. It doesn't have any resonance on what you're doing with your life. So,
well, a quiet, dignified response is your education that you're offering up in this way.
Yes.
Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
José Navas is a contemporary dancer and choreographer. He's performing in Montreal from November 7th to the 10th. The production is called Anatomie, or Anatomies. Navas left Venezuela. Il a quitté le Venezuela. And that's our word of the week, quitter. To leave.
Hi, my name is Karen and I live in Montreal. I broke up with my boyfriend yesterday. J'ai quitté mon copain hier.
Hi, my name is Victor. This morning I left the house at 6 because I started at 7 and I didn't want to be late. Ce matin, j'ai quitté la maison à 6 heures pour aller travailler, pour pas être en retard parce que je commence à 7 heures.
Hi, my name is Mike. It's like after closing up where you work, you leave your job. J'ai quitté. Or if you quit, you could also use the term j'ai quitté. The job wasn't satisfactory. I didn't find it was going to bring me to a higher degree, so I just I left the position. So j'ai quitté l'emploi pour essayer un autre emploi. I quit my job.
My name is Melissa. I'm 11 years old. I'm going to high school. Je m'en vais à l'école secondaire. Je vais quitter l'école primaire pour aller au secondaire. I'm leaving elementary school to go to high school.
Atta girl. Well, that's how people in Montreal use this week's word of the week, quitter. Joining me now is our word lady, Joanne Blais, in Ottawa. Hello, Joanne.
Hi.
Kind of a tricky spelling on this one. Eh?
Okay. Mm. So I will spell it then. It's quitter. Mm-hmm. Quitter. And I should say that it's not always the equivalent of to quit.
Yes,
in English,
well, this
we
is
have
where...
the verb to quit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, you always have to use quitter followed by what you are leaving.
Okay.
You can't just say j'ai quitté.
Right.
So it's one of those little, like, difficulty of the French language, right?
It looks so much like
quit.
It has
to be very precise. Yeah. You can't just use the verb without using what.
Well, this man who said, I left my job, and I was thinking, does he mean he quit? Or did he just left for the day?
It's a perfect example where you would have to say, j'ai quitté mon emploi, and not just j'ai quitté, meaning I resigned. Mm-hmm. That would be an anglicism.
So, and the same thing with the end of a relationship. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving you. Are you just leaving me now because you're getting up from the table and walking away?
I'm leaving you. That reminds me, the first boyfriend I had, il m'a quitté au téléphone. Could you believe that? He left me saying, I'm leaving you, and he did that on the phone.
He broke off with you.
He broke off with me.
Ooh,
il m'a quitté au téléphone. So I was heartbroken.
So the breakup sense.
The breakup. So, yes. Right. So you do quitter un mari, quitter sa femme. Mm. Oh, funny story. This week, I'm in my classroom, and one of my students say, Madame Blais, do you mind today if I leave the class at 2 o'clock instead of 4? So she said, est-ce que je peux quitter le cours à 2 heures? And I said, no, I guess you must have a good reason. And you know what she says to me?
No.
I'm getting married at 5.
Oh.
So I had to leave at 2.
That's considered a big event.
So everybody looked at her and said, what are you doing here?
That's quite a commitment to come at all.
Yes, yeah. Right. So another use of quitter, a polite way when you're talking to someone, like someone calls and you want to say, hold the line, you should say, ne quittez pas.
Yes.
Right? That would be the polite way, as opposed to say, gardez la ligne, which would be an anglicism. Right?
Yeah, a bit of a translation.
Exactly.
I've got a great quote on quitter, which is that Catherine Deneuve, at the end of an evening, a table full of people, got up and said, je vous quitte, I have to go. Mm-hmm. And she said, ce n'est pas la fatigue, mais plutôt l'ennui.
Oh.
Not because I'm tired, but because
I'm bored,
says Catherine Deneuve. That is
boy.
Why she had to leave. Not the most entertaining.
That's
company.
One way of saying I have to leave, right? Je dois vous quitter, n'est-ce pas?
Yeah.
Alors
tu
on
dois
nous quitter.
On doit se quitter. That's right. Bye-bye, Joanne.
Bye-bye.
Joanne Blais is our word lady. We reach her every week in Ottawa. We love hearing from you at C'est la vie. You can reach us at area code 514-597-4486. Our email address is clv@cbc.ca. Tanya Birkbeck asked people in Montreal how they use this week's word of the week, quitter. C'est la vie is produced by Alison Cook. I'm Fiona Downey. Au revoir.
Hi, I'm Jesse Brown. I'm the host of Search Engine, a new CBC radio show that is all about how the internet is changing politics and culture. It's not a gadget show. We don't really care much about technology so much as we care about the effect that technology is having on the world that we live in. All of the surprising and significant and funny stories that we bring you on Search Engine are about things that are happening right now. In the short time that we've been on the air, we've already become the CBC's most popular news podcast in the States. So come find out why. Subscribe to our podcast on CBC's podcasting page or through iTunes.